You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is the Anfield Wrap. It's Neil Atkinson with Ian Ryan, Mike Kearney and Rob Gutman. After Liverpool go to Vicarage Road, Watford, and win by 5-0, we're going to be talking obviously about that, and we will come on to talk about the Champions League game that is upcoming against Atletico Madrid. But the point is, and the point of this, Rob, is that Liverpool's second most important game of the week, of the three away games, was at Vicarage Road. They absolutely paired through it, and the most important goal of the game was the second one.
Yeah, it was. It definitely was. We have talked about this off air, haven't we, Neil? About, we were saying it was in the ground, and I think even sort of around TV screens, it wasn't the biggest let-off in Liverpool history. But it was in my head. It was in your head. I felt it was a big, big goal because we had been in such control. You don't... Look, there's an old adage, and I can't remember, there's a saying in Brazilian football that if you don't score when you're on top, you will concede. Something that seems like such an obvious truism. But it gets truer the better you are, unfortunately.
I feel it. That's the way I feel as well. When you're that dominant, if you do not turn 1-2, if you don't turn 0-1, but if you don't turn 1-2, if you are that dominant, it feels like you are tempting all the fates.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was on about 25, and there was a Watford player in our half on the ball, and I was thinking, well, something's a bit weird here. Oh, they've got into our... And honestly, that wasn't sort of like giving it the big one. It genuinely, you hadn't seen them in our half. Apart from that one moment where Trent makes a fantastic late tackle, which turned out to be an offside situation anyway, before we score, funnily enough, I think. They didn't feature in the game. I mean, obviously, the second goal was sublime. And at that moment, the game surely was won, Brian.
The tone in from the first minute, set by, I'd say, the two centre-backs, Henderson, Arnold and Mo Salah, was just absolutely phenomenal. Down that side of the pitch, I think especially, I say the two centre-backs, but I do mean Matip. Matip, Arnold, Henderson and Salah just turned Liverpool into a monstrous force in that first 10 minutes. The goal's coming. Somehow we've only played 8 minutes of football and the goal feels like it's been coming for 25. That's how dominant, how aggressive Liverpool were in those early going.
Absolutely. If the manager had a dream scenario in his head, then what actually transpires can't have been too far from that, because it's phenomenal from Liverpool. It's a five-star performance in every sense. It really is five-star in every sense. And as you say there, the centre-backs very much set the tone, along with one or two others. And I think when you're going away to a team like Watford, it's very, very important to tell a story in the first 10 minutes. And Liverpool tell a story. And the story is, we're not here to mess about. We're here to fucking roll you. And that's exactly what happens. Matip, first 10, wins a couple of battles. Van Dijk, similar. Arnold is just imperious on the ball. But it's not just what Liverpool do with the ball. It is that rough and tumble as well. It's that we're going to move you about a bit here. Matip does it with Saar, and then Salah does it for the goal with Rose. And from there, it's never in doubt, Neil.
Was it obvious on the TV how aggressive Watford were? I don't mean dirty, but they were very in our faces. And that's what makes the achievement the greater. They'd come out, he'd wound them up. They had a plan to not let us settle on the ball, to press us everywhere on the pitch early on. But once we had that goal and they were still doing that, I thought, come 55, 60, you are gone. But that's sort of just contextualised Liverpool's achievement. They were up against an opponent who were motivated, I felt.
They were shot on 20-25, I thought, especially Rose, but not just Rose.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of possibly learning from Brentford, to be honest with you, Mike. Post-match, they mentioned Manchester City and starting slowly. But to me, it made me think that someone's had a big long think about what happened at Brentford, and a few of those players have and have said, we're not standing for that. That's not happening to us again. The way we deal with this is by compressing play so much into their half, they've got no chance of escape.
To be honest, yeah. I mean, we've literally heard some players in the squad. I remember listening to Lallana and Henson talking, it was years ago, about Seville, the three all over there. The way we concede goals, and I remember him saying, it's just not happening again. That doesn't happen at Liverpool Football Club. And I think there'd have been conversations around that with Brentford, even though there's context to how that game was in terms of, you know, they were probably a better side against...
Yeah, Watford would have been a tired rabble by about 25.
Yeah, I mean, but I remember you saying as well, I think I was on the main show after Brentford, and I remember you saying that we sort of give Brentford a bit of life. Like, things happen that give Brentford a bit of life, and Rob mentions there that Trent tackled that offside in the end. I think that was one that could have happened and maybe gave Watford a bit of life, but just didn't, because we weren't going to let it. And I think you're right, we do sort of take the Brentford thing and go there and just go, well, once we get the first, we aren't letting up. It will happen. The second will come. You will tire. We'll get two. And they were cooked by half time, and that was that. For them there, that would have just been get in and let's see what we can do second half in terms of keeping damage limitation. I mean, Salah has two shots, doesn't he, in the first half, still at 1-0, I think, which is it's like a curling effort into the top corner. Ben Foster gets two, and you can just tell we're all on it.
And there's actually quite a bad miss by him as well. He races onto a pass.
Yeah, it's a trap pass. It's a brilliant pass.
It's a brilliant ball.
I just think everyone, that's an 8 out of 10 from absolutely every single player on the pitch. I mean, the goalie doesn't have loads to do. He's great with his feet. He's good with the calmness of the whole team. And then when he does have something to do in the second half, he does it. But that's what you see when you get an 8 from everyone. Doesn't always happen, because if it did, wouldn't football be easy? But everyone's absolutely superb. Matip passes the ball, I think, at the end of the first half, and you see the stats pop up 14 times more than the whole of Watford's team. And, like, he's a centre-half. And that is the biggest improvement we've seen, I think, with Liverpool. We're just... There's no... I remember years ago watching us when we had Ali Sissoko at left back, and every team would funnel over and go, Greg, give him the ball. And you can't do that with anyone in this Liverpool team, and probably 14, 15, 16 players, even though the midfield there, people would have been saying, oh, it's stretched, it's thin, you know, it's not really the best midfield we'd pick, but it's superb on the day. It's Milner for the second goal was absolutely phenomenal, making the run, cutting it back, perfect. Naby, absolutely brilliant. I think there's 8 all over the pitch. I genuinely don't think anyone has a bad game or a bad 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, I thought outside, talking about individuals as men of the match, and I know we probably will, and there's obvious candidates, I thought the midfield was man of the match in a certain sense. And that's saying against a front three that's just bagged 5 goals and a defence which was imperious. But I thought, maybe you just talk about the midfield in isolation, I thought as a unit, it was one of our most complete midfield performances, notwithstanding the opposition. For a while, they really gelled well together. We did not miss anyone else you want to mention, by the way. We didn't miss Fabinho, we didn't miss Thiago, we didn't miss Curtis Jones, recent guile, anybody. I thought that I'm not advocating that's our midfield from here on in, but they did all know their jobs. Jordan Henderson was imperious in that 6, but also allowed to be released. It was, again, we're seeing this time again with Liverpool now, the carousel midfield formation. Especially when Fabinho's not playing, and it was just hugely impressive to watch.
Back to, you know, Klopp's dream scenario, Rob, there is a world where this could have been a tricky afternoon for Liverpool, you know, because of the things you've just mentioned there. There's a lot of players missing, you know, it's half a spine, essentially. It's a 12:30 kickoff on the back of an international break. We know the manager doesn't like them, and we don't like them as fans.
It's Saturday, yeah.
It's not, and they've got the new manager in as well, and you can talk about Watford being poor. But until the weekend, they've not conceded more than 2 goals in the league. So, you know, that they've done all right in a lot of the games this season. But Liverpool are just brilliant from kind of start to finish. And I think the centre-back thing's really, really interesting, because it does, even though the forwards will get the glory, and rightly so, the centre-backs, back to Neil's point around set and tone, it really is. It is 9 out of 10 stuff, really. And you've got Van Dijk, someone who can probably spray those diagonals better than anyone in world football. But in Joe Matip, you've got one of the best passes through the lines that I think I've seen from a centre-back. It's brilliant. And you see it for one of the Salah chances that you mentioned before, where Foster saves it. It's a great run from Robertson, but the ball from Matip just dissects half the Watford team. And that's where the chance comes from. So straight away, you knew Liverpool were on it. We knew it, they knew it, and Watford knew it as well.
You can't be having a centre-half who can step into midfield at any given moment. It's such an asset. It's a very simple thing. It's the math. It's a numbers game. If your centre-half can genuinely carry the ball 15 yards, 20 yards into a midfield, suddenly, what is a midfield that's going man for man meant to do? It has to break from that pattern. It has to, one or two of them have to step out to challenge him, and then suddenly there's gaps. It's an incredible asset, that.
You get to, I think there's a little patch where you see that on about 2025 when they at least begin to try to find a foothold in the game, and it comes from Sarr. But there's this period of time where Sarr's just running around after Liverpool players passing the ball to each other, and he's almost turning around to his teammates saying, you've got to come out and help me here, because I'm just pressing these good players and I'm not getting near any of them. But the flip side of that is they're saying, well, if we step, then it's going to create these holes for this lad to make this run or this lad to make this run. And you've just thrown these huge questions at a Watford team that just weren't equipped to answer them, Rob. And I think that all the way through the game, you know, when the second, now in hindsight, because it comes, the second goal comes, you're almost able to say it's because Liverpool have moved them around, Liverpool have tired them out, Liverpool have drained the, you know, sapped the legs, sapped the brains, done all the stuff that you do. And that does happen. You know, as I said before, there is always the mild concern if you don't take advantage of it. But by the time you get to that point, they do look shattered, you said before, thinking about 45, 55, all that sort of time.
Yeah.
By about 30, 35, they are absolutely shot by trying to keep up with this Liverpool team.
Yeah, they were. I mean, and unsurprisingly, they don't really come out at 1-0 down, I think, because Liverpool's foot goes on the throat straight away. Their game plan very quickly becomes, even if it wasn't going to be all along when behind, be in this game on 75 minutes, you know, at 1-0. That's all they were interested in. Liverpool's movement was just too much for them. I mean, the second goal is another example of that. Because you think, why isn't how is Milner able to overlap like that? That's probably, I don't know, I haven't got the pitch in front of me or a freeze frame, but somebody would have been detailed to watch what the hell Andy Robertson was doing. And Andy Robertson was tucked in that moment, and James Milner just broke his own line and fucked with their heads, and there's the goal. But that was winger James Milner instinct. I know we've talked about this before, but that was pure, you know, I run outside my man, James Milner.
Well, want to come back to talk about the two midfielders who were in Henderson, Mike, but let's deal with the main man. Mo Salah is perhaps always will be absolutely incredible. Best player in the world right now. He was already at a really good level. He finished his last season, I'd say, at a really good level. I don't think he's gone up one. I think he's gone up two or three. He's an absolute joy to behold at the moment. He looks like he's having a ball as well.
He's doing things that shouldn't be possibly to make that look effortless. And his last two goals for Liverpool Football Club are goals that some players who are really, 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 really good might never, ever, ever score.
Yeah.
Because I don't even know what it is. If I did, and if I knew, I'd be a millionaire because I'd be able to tell everyone how to do it. But you just can't. That's just in someone that, and I think you're right, he hasn't just gone up a level. He's gone up several, and I think everyone knows that. Like Danny Rose would be thinking, oh, this is going to be tough today. What can I do? I think he needs to be off, having an off day for me to have any chance. I think that's what every defender is going to go into a game thinking against Mo Salah, especially in the form he's in. How dare you even be able to do that is what I'd be thinking as a defender. You've just done that like the other week, mate. Why are you doing this to us? You're winning 3-0.
Did you not think, you know, you watch his goal back and all the slow motion sequences from every angle, we've all seen them. There's about three times he could have taken a pen there. And I'm not saying they were pens, but in modern parlance, there's three pens you could take there if you're a forward with that quicker feet. There are three trailing legs, at least two thrown out, and you go, oh, he would have had a 70% penalty shout in any of those moments.
It's the speed of it as well, which is frightening, though, because that's happening in real time, and it just looks like he's got the game on pause, walking around, doing, this is my time, I'm going to do this. And the little rollback to make the space is like, how have you even got onto that? Like, how? I just think, how do you deal with Mo Salah? I don't think you can make a plan to go and deal with Mo Salah, because it's two or three players. And it's not 11 v 11 then.
I love the bit at the end of that goal. Again, if you see it in real time or slow motion, where he's done all those bits, he's twisted blood all around him, and then he's alone with the ball for that moment. It's still on the turf. He's put it where he needs to be. And at that moment, it's virtually a free kick from an angle with just the keeper to be. But he's done that. He's done all those bits, and there he is. And he can just be and he's just icy calm. Goes, there you go. There's the ball. There's me. I'm now approaching it and stroking it into the net. You know, it's not like a last ditch before the last tackle flies in. He's just done everything. His preparation. Do you know what I mean? His preparation for the goal.
Like a chef who's done all the ingredients, put them to one side, and then just puts them all in at the right moment.
The scallops at the end. That's the easy bit, you know.
But I genuinely don't think I can do anything in my life as good as he can play football. Like I said this on Saturday, and I thought, what can I do that good? And I just, well,
no shame in that, Mike.
No, there's no shame in that, no, because he's the best person at this in the world.
I'm with you there, Mike.
We did a lot of chat last season, Ian, and we do a bit of Liverpool missed the crowd. And then we'd do something else where we'd say, I think Mane misses the crowd. And then sometimes you'd say, I think Firmino misses the crowd. And
turns out they missed the crowd.
Well, I think there's an element that they did miss the crowd. But one of the things I think we all thought was Mo Salah will just be Mo Salah. He'll be absolutely fine because he is Mo Salah. And broadly, he was absolutely fine. But I'm beginning to think he really missed the crowd as well. Because I think not least from his responses to when he's doing these brilliant things as well. But I'm just looking at someone who, to me, that goal, as Rob says, there's lots of other things he can do at different times, but it's almost like he goes, now I'm going to put a show on for these now. There's an element of where there's just this absolute, I think he's just a performer, and I think he's decided he's loving the performance. He's a driven pro. He wants to win trophies for Liverpool, but he wants to make an away crowd of 3,000 and a televisual audience of millions as unbelievably happy and spellbound as possible. And that's what I'm seeing. I'm just seeing an absolute performer, as much as Firmino, as much as Mane, if not maybe, just maybe more.
I think you're right. He's got us on strings at the minute. I mean, he's absolutely loving it, isn't he? And I think, you know, the numbers last year would suggest that he was okay, because the numbers are really, really good. And we know Mane's and Firmino's weren't particularly at the level we'd expect. But at the minute, you can tell he is just loving playing football for this football club. And I think the goal, on the back of the City goal as well, you're just thinking, you've got no right to be doing that 2 weeks in the run.
I don't think he scores that at their end. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think he does it all at their end. I think he probably makes a different decision. But he's got our Liverpool supporters there, and he's going, lads, just watch this. Watch what I'm about to do.
Have you heard the crowd noise back?
Yeah, it's incredible.
Do you know who literally got that in real time? Me, because I went to the toilet for a piss and missed the goal. Obviously I did. I saw all the tappings.
You've had a shot.
But for that one,
they're the main ones.
But when they played that noise back, I thought, that was literally my toilet experience. I had... Let's go again. Ooh, another mad let off. Believe me, I enjoyed it just as much as if I'd seen it.
I mean, I love a goal where the keeper doesn't move, and Foster is just absolutely rooted. But the other thing is, if you get the angle, I think LFC TV have got where the Watford crowd, most of them to a man, are just clapping. Because what else can you do?
Yeah.
What else? You're in the presence of genius. What else can you do? And we've been there as fans at Anfield. Sometimes there's nothing else you can do other than just clap, because he's that good. He really is that good. And Neil's right. There's not a player out there at the minute in world football who can hold a candle to Salah, because he has kicked on. And I think there was a lot of chatter online about, you know, Premier League great 11s. He's in it. He's absolutely in it all day. And I think that's... I mean, there's been a lot of great players in the Premier League, you have to say that, and there's been a lot of great players who've played that position, but he is by far, for me now, he's right up there with anyone. He's moved on to, I think Neil mentioned Henry levels, and it almost feels like that's where he's operating at now. He's operating at that level where there's not a lot you can do to stop him. If he decides he's going to take a game by the scruff of its neck, what are you going to do to stop him? Because his close control, it seems to have kicked on a level for me, because he's always been a brilliant footballer, but in the last... I don't know, 3 months, he really has kicked on.
The range of passing as well. The range of passing, and he tries some stuff that doesn't come off during the game, that's unbelievably flamboyant. But it feels to me, Rob, as though he's given the responsibility, or he feels he has the responsibility, or he wants the responsibility of being the best wide player in the league, the best number 9 in the league, and the best number 10 in the league. Like, to me, at the minute, it feels like he's taken all of these things and put them in a big bag and said, I'll just do all of this, lads. I'm going to do all of this, and I'm going to find my way through these matches, and we're all in this together. You're going to come with me on it.
Well, if you look at the we talk about back-to-back goals with similar artistry to them. He's done back-to-back assists, right? Which, they were the only thing... If City finishes 1-1 and it's Mane's goal is our goal, or 1-0 even... That's all we're talking about. For a week, we're talking about Salah's assist against Man City. And if that finishes 1-0 and it's a hard-fought scrap, again, all week we're going to be talking about that assist for Sadio Mane. It's incredible. And what I like about it is, I think in the past when we've seen peak Mo Salah, even in his first season where he scores 45-odd goals, is he got to a stage where it was the Mo Salah show in his head alone. And there was a degree of greediness. Now, you live with that with your best players, especially if they're bagging.
If he's scored 44 goals in a season, you put up with it.
You put up with it, even if he makes the odd decision where you think you really could have squared that or whatever. it almost feels like he's not doing that now. He doesn't need to. I mean, he's enjoying the level of assist. I like the fact that he's enjoying assisting like that. Though, you know, they've actually sort of carbon copy assists as well.
Yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, I mean,
they're both spins. They're both demonstrations that he's lost none of his pace. And the delicious
the way to pass, the way to pass on both.
The weight is ridiculous. And the fact that he does it with the outside of his foot just makes him more irresistible to watch.
But putting all that together, though, isn't it? It's like the spin and the pass is good enough. It's like, in individual, he's absolutely sold Danny Rose, like, without even looking like he was trying. And then he's put it on a plate without even looking like he's trying, even though it looked dead hard to do.
And he's done it to teams at both ends of the table now in two successive weeks. I mean, talking about his place in the pantheon of Premier League greats, has the Premier League ever had a recognised world number one, if we go in terms of tennis-style rankings? I don't think it has. I know there's an argument about Thierry Henry, but he probably was there when, was it Rivaldo was generally, or Ronaldinho were regarded as the world number one?
I think what's interesting is, I don't think anyone, with one or two exceptions, Maradona being one as an exception, I don't think there's been that many moments where everyone's been able to sort of go, this fella's the best player in the world, until we got to what we just had with Ronaldo / Messi, and I obviously didn't very much think Messi ahead. I think that there's I'm not quite sure if you were to press pause, who was the best player in the world in 1997? I think that's a really difficult question to answer.
In my head, I've always had this chronology on it, and I've noticed there's always been two types, very simplistically speaking. The uber elite, right, you're talking about best player of all time, Maradona is one, Messi and Ronaldo are others. It goes Maradona for best part of a decade, and then it went below a level, Ruud Gullit and then Zinedine Zidane, in my book. Lots of other people.
You had the original Ronaldo, who was probably best player in the world in 1997, by the way.
Yeah,
who probably would have reached the level that we talk about Messi and Ronaldo now, if it wasn't for the injuries. And by the way, he gets to an unbelievable level anyway, because he's that good. But there's probably a bit of his career where if things fall differently for him, he's probably talked about as good as Messi is now.
I think so, but it didn't feel like there was a consensus. I think there was a consensus with Gullit for when AC Milan were peak in the early 90s. There was a consensus definitely with Zidane, I think, around that period. Rivaldo and Ronaldinho, it gets a little bit messy. And Thierry Henry, maybe it's because the Premier League wasn't honoured the way the Europeans didn't honour the Premier League.
It's the fact that United, well, there's another thing here as well, which is obviously going and doing it on the Champions League. Now, we've seen him do that both this season and in general.
Yeah.
So, and I think this is where all this can sort of become a perfect moment for him and us this season.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, if he continues to do what he's been doing, and it happens in quarterfinals, semifinals and finals of Champions League games, and or Liverpool win a title, then you are very, very close to just being able to say, well, for this 12 months, it was that fella. And he may well continue to be that fella. Because that's where I think the big messy thing is, he goes and does it in Champions League finals.
Well,
everywhere else, and then in Champions League finals, if you see what I mean. And that's the trick to pull.
The thing for us is, he's a man who likes a target. You know, give him a golden boot to go for, he will go for that golden boot. Now he can see the Ballon d'Or in his sights.
The Ballon d'Or, but I think the other thing which is absolutely key to this is, I think he just sees the trophies, because I think he sees the trophies are the way to the Ballon d'Or.
Well, like that was my supplementary point. Yeah, absolutely. For Liverpool Football Club, and I don't want to say we're the Mo Salah show, because this isn't the same as with Luis Suarez. He's hitting Luis Suarez levels, but he's got a much better team around him, and Luis Suarez has some decent players around him. But having said all that, it feels like a moment in history where Liverpool Football Club has the best player in the world. Liverpool Football Club needs to win some trophies.
But Neil talks about this. The trophies being a driving force, but I don't think it's just Mohamed Salah. If you look at the team as a whole, it very much feels like 18, 19 or 19, 20, where they have got their eyes very much fixed on the prize. And I also think there's almost a thing around, they'll have had their own conversations, both as small groups and probably as a wider group with the manager. They know that there's not loads and loads of time left for this group of players as a whole. And some of them are approaching what you'd say is maybe the kind of latter end, albeit still with two or three good years left. They deserve to have more than, and I say more than, because a league, a championship and a European Cup is fantastic on anyone's CV. But because of how naturally brilliant they are, both as individuals and a group of players, they deserve more than that. They absolutely deserve more than that.
I think last season accelerates that as well, you know. Like, they know, in history, it'll say Liverpool finished there in the league, but there's loads of context all around that. And I think that they know that, in a way, they were sort of hard done by a little bit last season, because they know that the ceiling of this team would have rolled that league not even 99 times, 100 times out of 100 last year, if everything goes the way or doesn't go as bad as it does. And I think they just think, well, do you know what? No one's really talking about this Liverpool side anymore, and that's a shame. So we're just going to go and put it right back on the map this season, and we're going to be relentless with it.
One of the things that I think is different from 18-19 and 19-20, and it's one of the things to sort of begin to move towards talking about Firmino and Mane, Rob, is I think that ultimately it doesn't feel like there is a Liverpool player playing poorly at the moment. I think you can go all the way through to the absolute sort of depth of the squad. I thought it was a little bit of a shame, but the manager's got other ideas. That, for instance, we don't get to see Minamino for a period of time, who so far, when he's had opportunities this season, I think he's played pretty well. Divock Origi, when he's had opportunities this season, he's played pretty well. I mean this going all the way through, like on a scale from Minamino and Origi all the way through to Mo Salah, with every footballer in between. You know, Liverpool at the weekend, there was meant to be nervousness around the midfield. Like you just said before, the midfield was absolutely tremendous throughout. I do not feel like there is a Liverpool player I've got even mild concerns about, up to and including the sub-goalkeeper. And that's a really strange place to be. And that actually wasn't the case for a lot of 18-19 and 19-20.
No, the squad is suddenly, it looks a rich squad. And the manager made this point, and it was beginning to come into view in pre-season, that what he was seeing, and you know, the vast majority of the fan base was fretting over Gini Wijnaldum's, replacing Gini Wijnaldum's minutes, about losing a front three player. But he's got solutions all over the squad. I think what he knew that we didn't, although it's not, is that at least one of Harvey Elliott and Curtis Jones would become a significant factor in our season. I think they felt that they probably were going to get Naby Keita and to a degree Oxlade-Chamberlain back, that they'd managed their minutes last season. They'd had them on, at least Keita had been on a program, we're led to believe. We knew we were bringing back three world-class centre-halves. So and in turn we were liberating Fabinho and Henderson's minutes back into the midfield. So everywhere you looked, he could see wins. And of course, there's Konate. So he could see the squad getting deeper and deeper and deeper. What's changed, I was looking at some stats before the show, is Liverpool are playing with an economy now as well, it's worth saying. Somebody has done some stats on this, I think I read in a Times piece this morning, which said, if you look in Klopp's era, for Liverpool to score a goal, it requires, during his entire tenure, 11 final third passes to lead to a Liverpool goal. That's the average. Last season, in the period to March, which is the nadir of that season, we'd got to needing 13. And it seemed like a lot, but that's quite a lot more in percentage terms. You know what it's been since April and the run we've been on, which spans about 20 games, it's down at something like 8.5. Mm. So Liverpool are getting much, much more economical in the way they're playing football, which... that speaks to more energy, more direct play. I sometimes think this, we've got overhung up on talking about ages. When you think about the great Bayern Munich, Barcelona and Real Madrid sides, they had a lot of lads going very, very deep into their 30s, quite frankly. And I think we rushed to write off. You know, that was, if anything, if we're talking about depth of squad on Saturday, what it also spoke to was players on the cusp of 30 are far, far from spent forces. And there's quite a few of them on that pitch. And by the way, not least James Milner at 34, whose energy levels were incredible.
I want to talk about the other two, because there's been legitimate concerns about them, Ian, I would say, at times last season. I think slightly less so this, in that Mane plays poorly at Chelsea and has one of those days where he couldn't hit a barn door at Leeds, but then finally does actually hit the barn door at the end of the game. But even during the match, I wasn't thinking Firmino was playing particularly well. And then he scores a hat-trick, and that's a proper number nine thing, and it was a proper number nine hat-trick. Mane's brilliant finish to open the scoring, and he should possibly grab another, but it's a brilliant first-time finish to open the scoring. This is what pairing looks like. It's not, you know, and I think at times we get caught up, it's not playing perfectly in every single moment and everything that you do at all seconds. Pairing is being able to come to the party and contribute for an attacking player between the sticks in the final third, and both of them are.
Yeah, I said after the kind of Leeds game, I think it was, you know, if Mane ends up with, you know, 18, 20 goals, I think we're all fine with that, even if he doesn't find his 18, 19 performance.
If he gets 18 to 20 league goals, that's best of the morning too. It's incredibly good.
I mean, look what he's on now. I mean, I've seen him take a lot of stick this season. And don't get me wrong, I was worried about him last season. I've been on these shows and I've said as much. But I think he's 5-8 this season. I mean, that's better than he's ever done in terms of goal
six
return.
Six all comps,
5-8. I think last season, you know, people will throw out he got 16. He did, but he got 11 in the league, which is nowhere near the level you expect of Sadio Mane. And, you know, Neil's point before about the crowd, maybe there's something in that as well. But 5-8, I mean, that is great stuff. I mean,
playing City and Chelsea
that.
As well.
Absolutely, everyone's more than happy with that. So I'm not really that worried about Sadio Mane, because maybe he doesn't get back to that season of 18-19. But I think that's almost, he's a victim of his own success, if you like, because you'll always look at that season and compare him to that. Well, you can't always hit those peak seasons. There'll just sometimes be seasons where you're just phenomenal and you might reach another level, but that's maybe 7.5, 8 out of 10. And that's perfectly fine as well, by the way. So I don't want to get too much hung up on the Mane stuff, because I think he's doing, at the minute, more than enough. Firmino, again, goal return, brilliant. And maybe there's almost been a, I don't know whether it's been a bit of a switch with Firmino, but one of the things that was starting to bug me, and I know he does loads of great stuff outside the box, but there were times when you just think, you need to just be between the posts sometimes. And that's what he did against Watford. He's between the posts. And I don't know whether there's been a little bit of, we've seen some of the kind of things that Jota's picked up, because when you have got Salah, when you have got Mane, inevitably there will be bits. There'll be bits to pick up, because those two are so good. They'll create so many chances. There'll be things that just bobble off the keeper. If you're in and around that 6-yard box, there's a good opportunity that you're going to be able to slot one. And that's what happens on Saturday. And yes, I don't think he particularly started great, Firmino, but who cares? He's knocked in three. We can all live with it.
That between the sticks is interesting. I remember Pep Linders has talked about it a few times. They value this in when they're analysing players they want to bring in. Players whose natural instinct is to spend a lot of their time arriving. He talked about it pre-season with Cade Gordon, how he's a Liverpool winger because he does that. When the minute Mo Salah arrived, you could tell there was a profile they wanted. Even though you didn't expect him to score 40 goals, you knew he'd be arriving on the back. When the ball was on the other wing, he'd be arriving on the back post. You could see that from his Roma videos. And I think that's a major thing. But with Bobby last season, I kept coming away from games going, how many shots did he get away today? Zero? One in the last two? He wasn't arriving. He wasn't getting shots away. He wasn't arriving between the posts. And I think they've had a word with him. Maybe they've just had to give him more license. Maybe he was taking on too much responsibility further back because of the problems we had in defence. Who knows? We think everybody was driven further back by those issues.
I think you're right. I think, when you see Jota come in and get the goals he gets, obviously some of that will be because you're playing with better players. But when he's playing for Wolves, I mean, a lot of the attention is on him to stop him. But you've got Sadio Mane, you've got Mohamed Salah, so inevitably there will be more gaps, there'll be more spaces to exploit. And I think Jota's obviously, he's reaped the rewards, because he takes up great positions, by the way. And I think for me, I think you're right, Rob, I think there will have been a conversation where, yes, what you're doing outside the box is great, but as a number nine, you've still got to contribute goals. And that was something that just seemed to have disappeared from his game. Even when you've got the good performances, you can't help but think, if you're a number nine, you want to have a goal on your kind of, under your name as well. And at the minute, you've got no complaints about any of the three.
Just one slight semi-miserable note of caution, Mike, is that we end up in a bit of a flap after we put 7 past Palace last season. It does happen. We go to Palace, we all think it could be a bit of a sticky game. Liverpool turn up, they put 7 past them. And then the next game, it's West Brom, and it all begins to go from there. I don't see that happening here. It's just important that we do bear in mind, and I think this is what this team does brilliantly, that, the game finishes, there's another 3 points to go and be won. The game finishes, there's another 3 points to go and be won. To me, that's what they look so focused on this season. I don't see anything knocking them off the course, but it has happened to teams before, that you get a hatful 1 week, and the following week you can struggle a bit in front of goal.
I think that's the hardest thing to build with a team. I think that's, we've seen it from at the start of Jürgen's reign, really, is the togetherness, the wanting to go again. They never say die in games, and we've seen it. He's pulled the crowd along with it as well, to be honest. Lots of examples of that. The West Brom 2 all the other year, everyone's mocking him for doing it, but all that builds to where we are today, having the whole thing in pulling in the same direction. And the fact that we've got that experience of last year, with all, as I said before, with all the context in and around it, we still go and do it, and we score against West Brom, but we drop the points. I think that's only going to strengthen
the idea. We can't let this happen again, lads. We learn. Yeah,
it's every day's a school day, isn't it? And this team isn't ever going to be, oh, we'll just roll these over, we're Liverpool. I don't think we'll ever see a Jürgen Klopp team have that in them, really. And if they do, they'd be getting a rocket.
There's a reason why I think those points are dropped like that. It sticks with me from my youth. In the late 80s, Liverpool, within 12 months, have two big win performances at Anfield. They beat Palace 9-0 and I think Swansea 8-0 in the space of about 12 months. And I think after both, they draw. after Palace 9-0, if memory serves, we play Norwich at home, and it's the biggest lambs to the slaughter in theory, but it's a 0-0. Same with the West Brom after Palace. I think the problem with, this is why I'm almost sort of, it sounds a bit perverse, glad that it stops at five. Once it gets 6 and 7, I think then your next opponents are, if ever they weren't focused on their task in hand, they're very focused when they see a team's been beaten 7-0 by them. And they can go, well, hang on, they're a bit better than us. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, we beat Palace 7-0 and West Brom are going, fuck, Palace are a bit better than us. We've only got one job.
It's right? Also, I think it helps that it's two big games coming up as
that's
well.
That's my final point. Yes, it really, really helps it's Man United. So we get the confidence, but they also know they can't put 11 behind the ball at home to Liverpool.
Well, they can.
Yeah.
We'll
bring it, quite frankly. But, you know, it is a different scenario. So you said tempting all the fate in the world.
Nah,
yeah.
It's important to remember that Manchester United are cowards. Ian, once Milner's had a lot of praise. What I think is interesting, just relatively quickly, but from a tactical point of view, is Milner's charged with being aggressive, being direct, being more final third. Both Milner and Keita play really well. It seems as though there's been a bit of a decision made, I think, on Keita this season, which is, he's going to play, if we allow that there's a number six and we allow that one's more aggressive, then someone ends up in the middle between those two positions. And it seems as though that decision's been made that Keita this season is going to be that player and not the more aggressive one. I just think that's quite interesting. We've got a bit of a body of evidence now, up to and including the substitution. When he brings Chamberlain on, it's Chamberlain who gets to go and run amok. Milner goes to fullback and Keita still keeps doing the responsible job.
Yeah, and he's more than capable as well. I mean, there are those stats flying around that, you know, when Naby Keita plays, Liverpool tend to win football matches, and I thought he was really good. And I didn't really see him maybe getting picked for this one because he'd had the three games in the international break, and you are always thinking about Naby, can he go for the fourth? But the managers obviously, you know, looked at him and thought, well, he can. And obviously they have done a few tweaks, haven't they, behind the scenes with the fitness and stuff, so maybe they get them to a place where now they do trust him a little bit more. And I know he had that issue against Norwich where he kind of has the foot injury and stuff. But it's just great to see him out on the pitch, Neil, because you know you've got a hell of an asset. If he's out on the pitch, he's a very, very good footballer. And the point around Milner was interesting. I mean, it was almost a bit of a throwback to his, you know, when he comes on for City against Liverpool in 13-14, and he's doing loads of stuff down the flanks, and he's causing absolute havoc, and he does a little bit for a second goal. It was brilliant stuff from Milner, rolling back the years. And he can't do it every week because he is 35 years of age, not far off 36. But my God, just when you start to doubt James Milner, he goes and throws in a performance like that. It's just testament to him and how he's looked after himself. I mean, you always forget I think he's 3 months older or younger than Wayne Rooney. They're virtually the same age. Rooney packed it in years ago.
Do you know that, just staying on back on the Keita thing for a minute, he's an elite presser of a football, Naby Keita, whether you're asking him to do the fancy things or not.
Yeah.
You know, if there's anything close to an assist for Mo Salah's world-class goal, Naby doesn't have, I think Firmino has the last touch before Salah has all the touches. But we're only in that position because Naby presses a guy. They're about to come out.
He's a very smart presser. Yeah, that's what I think he is. He's not constantly all over everybody, but he just seems to intuitively know when there's going to be a little spice, a little bit of weakness, and bang, there he is.
Yeah, he does. I mean, I thought generally our counter-pressing when they were in their transitions was fantastic, not just to win it back, but to stop them. I noticed in your agenda you talked about there was some Guardiola-ness about the performance in Liverpool, and I see what you mean, but one of the things that struck with me was our, I'm not going to call it tactical fouling because I don't think it was tactical fouling, but I was surprised we were close to picking up a couple of bookings, I thought, in that game. James Milner and his near obligatory one. But we were very quick to put a foot in when they had a sniff of coming out, not just pressing, but making sure we made that tackle and it was ball or man. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And you know, City are adept at that, aren't they? Although they'll tug shirts and things like that, we weren't quite that cynical. But I thought that was something I've wanted to see in Liverpool's games. Like, you don't just come out. We will put the foot in.
That's just all part and parcel of keeping the foot on, isn't it? I think foot on the throat and just we're not letting you out. There's absolutely no way out or back in this for you. So you might as well just submit now and give us the ball back because it'll be much easier for you.
I mentioned there, I think it is possibly our most sort of Guardiola City performance under Klopp, Ian. Up to and including the second half and second gear, just very quickly on the expected goals, on about 71 minutes when Mane misses the chance, Liverpool's expected goals is around 2.84 according to StatsBomb, and Watford's is 0.02. Liverpool very much just cruise through a lot of the second half, but especially from 70 minutes onwards, with an eye on the game that's coming midweek, with an eye on the games that are coming up. And in all senses, it did feel to me in lots of ways our most sort of, you know, 1920, there's a lot of tight wins. this felt like Liverpool were getting the job done, getting the business done early so that they could rest with the substitutions, rest with the ball, rest in the game.
Yeah, so when I compared it before to kind of 18, 19 and 19, 20, it's very much from a mentality point of view. As opposed to maybe some of the performances. But I think you're right, you know, back to the very start of this, where I talked about, you know, Klopp wanting a dream scenario, he gets to rest both his fullbacks, which is huge. You know, if you want to get through this long, hard season, you're going to have moments and times where you can rest some of those players, and we know how important the fullbacks are. He gets to rest James Milner, albeit for a few minutes as well. And you think he's probably got one eye on that game midweek, and... You know, I heard some of your stuff, Neil, around what will he do? Will he maybe throw a Divock in there? Will he maybe throw a Tsimikas in there? I just think he's going to take this incredibly seriously, even though it is maybe the least important of the three this week, because there is a bit of wriggle room in the Champions League. I just think he knows how important it is to put a marker down. And I know he's had the opportunities in the past where he still played players in games where you think he probably shouldn't. The Jota one always kind of creeps up. But I just think Liverpool owe these one a little bit. And I know that isn't always a thing from the manager's point of view, and he'd never tell you that, but I think behind the scenes Liverpool's players,
he likes learning is the thing that he likes. So for instance, last time he went there we got beat. There'll be something in the back of his mind saying, well, that doesn't happen, we learn from that. Absolutely. We don't let that happen to us again. And I do think that that's something that's quite consistent with him through his Liverpool career.
Yeah, I would agree. And for me, the very thought of him making, you know, loads of changes for this one, I just don't see it. I think it will be pretty much as strong as you could go, give or take maybe one or two, because there's 5 days between this and United. There's a lot
there's
of
five times, subs as well,
and there's five subs. So I expect him to go really, really strong. I think there might be a Matip thing where he says to Joe, listen, you're playing probably far more football than most of us thought you could, and there's been opportunities to rest Matip, and he's not taking it. But I think this will be one where he goes, you know what, we can play Joe Gomez, we can play Canate. I suspect it might be Joe Gomez, and he gives Matip the break, and maybe he does look at something fullback wise, because Tsimikas has looked more than adequate.
I think the subs tell me he's not going out. I think he wouldn't sub them in the way in which he does if he was going to do it. Don't worry, I think that if that wasn't the case, then you would have a situation where he would go for the subs to me says he's made his mind up that they're going to start this one, and the fullbacks are going to start this one, and then we're going to go from there.
Yeah, if I was a better man, it's good this is on video, isn't it, by the way? if I was a better man, I suspect he will look at Trent and Robertson and then maybe make a decision. You know, if Liverpool are doing well in the game, he could make a tweak and bring Tsimikas on. But I just expect it to be really strong, Neil. And I think you've got, you know, the opportunity to bring Fabinho back in. We know the keeper will come back in. Do we know where Thiago's up to in terms of...
He hadn't done team training, the manager said, before Saturday. So that makes me think there's not much time to do team training since then. But no. Fabinho's back in, as you say, Alisson's back in. So I think he's got moves. Honestly, don't be fretting about it. Rob, just for the listeners, people who aren't watching it on the YouTube, Rob's knocked a big cup of tea over. And everyone's just threatened to sort it. And he's hit Mike with it. But Mike's absolutely fine. You know, Mike's been in boozers with me, Rob. He's had far worse. You don't need to worry about that.
This on video.
Harriet's leapt into action as well, as has Rob. It might be worth watching in the outtakes. Dennis Norden, one for the teenagers there. I'll stick with you, Ian, as Mike drives himself off and Rob continues to be very, very guilty. The reason why I think he might do a Divock is just solely because I think what he might have the idea of is these will be all right with 0-0 at 60. I'm all right with 0-0 on 60. I'm then saying we change it, we improve it, and we go from there.
Possibly. I mean, maybe you will. I mean, I didn't think of Divock when I thought of this fixture, to be honest. I can see a Jota move, because he was obviously available for the weekend, so I can very much see him doing something with Jota. And I think we spoke about Mohamed Salah before. He is very much a footballer who does not want to miss any football matches. Give him a stage, and he wants to play on it. So I can't imagine a scenario where Salah doesn't start this one. I think if there's a change in the front three, it very much feels like it is Jota coming in for a Mane or a Firmino. And then obviously he's got bigger decisions to make with United on the horizon, because then you would imagine the likes of a Curtis Jones, the likes of a Thiago are a little bit closer to fitness.
None of us called it before the last three, that were in a row. I think it was Brentford, Porto and
City. So hard to pick his teams this season, honestly.
He literally really picked the same 11, didn't he, for all three?
But then the flip side is, for Milan, he throws Divock in.
Yeah, I know.
He's got the Preston thing, hasn't he? So I don't think he's asked. I think he'll just do what he wants for the Tuesday, Sunday's massive. If it was Tuesday, Saturday, there's probably more on the Tuesday changes, but it's Tuesday, Sunday. He'll go. Fabinho and Alisson obviously come back in for both, I'd say. And then Preston's a give Kate Gordon a go again.
I do wonder, I'm going to say this final thing on trying to second guess him. City, we're not quite at it, right? why we're not quite at him. I wonder if he came out of that game thinking, I don't think maybe in hindsight I should have risked the same 11, three on the bounce there, because maybe we lost 0.5%, even though it was a Tuesday-Sunday situation then, by the way.
Yep,
still was still was a bit of travelling back from the Iberian Peninsula again. So I wonder if he thinks, maybe that trick can't be pulled off again. Maybe it is the two for Madrid, two for United, so that four have been changed from today by the time we get there.
It's where we are in midfield. That sort of lets you be able to do that, I think, though, because the Jones injury, we don't know what that is at the moment, do we? We just know he's come back from the U21s injured.
I think I'll come back to it, Mike. I think his options are interesting in that I think he's got options in the front three and I think he's got options in the back four. But I don't think he might not have quite as many as he'd like in midfield yet. So Fabinho comes back in, that frees up Henderson to take one of Keita and Milner's places. You'd have thought possibly more likely to be Milner's. But then we're not quite sure whether or not he might be prepared to go Fabinho, Henderson, Chamberlain. Or whether he'd go Fabinho, Henderson, stick with Keita. Milner can be thrown in there. And then there is where is Jones and where are Thiago up to at this point?
Yeah, it is the options thing. But also the fact that we've got the five subs means, with the European competition, means I think that there'll be less of a surprise. Someone's coming off on 60. Keita will come off on 65.
Well, two or three, yeah.
Two or three will come off there, and I think that's how we'll get through it in the end. It's, have we had the options that we've got in midfield available to us, I just don't see it as it would have been a problem. It's been more of a problem for him for a selection headache, really.
Is Fabinho for Henderson a bit of a shoo-in in a certain sense?
It means possibly.
It guarantees you arrive at Old Trafford without injury notwithstanding, with two lads who've only played two.
When you say Henderson was the one who probably emphasised the struggles Tuesday, Sunday with City, but maybe that was more the positioning of...
To be fair, Neil spoke before about all of the players pairing, and I think that's fair given the performance against Watford. Henderson was one of my biggest worries, to be honest, going into the weekend. I think he's been in quite poor form, and I love him, by the way. Mm. As people who listen to these shows will know, but I just think, the Milan goal seemed to mask a number of poor performances, City being the big one where he just didn't turn up for me in either half. Other players got better as the game got on. Henderson seemingly got worse. But I thought against Watford, he was really, really good in that sixth position. He looked like his old self again. So it's good to see him clicking back in. But I agree with you, Rob. If he's got the wriggle room, I think he would have took Henderson out for Atletico Madrid. I just don't know whether he's got the numbers to be able to do it.
Fancy us?
Yeah, at the moment I fancy us for every single game. The thing about Atletico is it's a free hit in a certain sense because we've posted these 6 points, so we could probably do some mad things. But if I were Klopp, I would want to go to Old Trafford's the big game, right? I don't give a... ultimately, we can lose 4-0 in Madrid. I'll take that if it means we win at Old Trafford. But I think we need to go to Old Trafford bouncing. We're bouncing at the moment, and we need to still be bouncing by the time we arrive in Manchester, given United, even if they get a good result against Atalanta, are still going to be plagued with doubt.
Fancy us, Mike?
I do, yeah. I think, as Rob says there, we're flying at the minute. We will get chances. We know they're a stubborn team, but we will get chances. And, any of them fall to the man who's in the form of his life and the best player in the world at the moment, you'd think they'd be more worried about what we can do to them than what... to be honest, they need the points more than what we do from this game, is what you'd also say, and they've then got to come to Anfield, so they probably think, well, we beat them at our place and then we can take a point from Anfield, which would probably make a bit easier for
especially
us in a weird way.
Especially as we expect, Mike, I struggle to split the difference between Porto and Milan. I can see a situation where Porto and Milan draw against each other twice, which doesn't help either of them, but neither of them looks to me to be substantially better than the other.
It's 10 points that get you through generally in these group stages, and we can take four out of these next two against Madrid, and they can probably take four and think, well, we're done there. So I think that's sort of the way the first two games have gone have really helped us, the fact that we've dug ourselves out against Milan, got the 6 points on the board, as you said. Then the other two teams in the group are neither here nor there, and that's, they're going to have a big battle, so let that be them. Let's just do our business this week, and even if we do somehow come to a loss in Madrid, I don't think it's going to derail us massively. So, but I do fancy us at the minute because you've just got to.
I think this manager and this group of players ride momentum better than most others, and I think that's why he'll want to go into the United game with a positive result. And whether that's a win or a draw, not too sure. Don't think it'll be easy on Tuesday night, but I absolutely fancy Liverpool to kind of remain unbeaten in the group.
Okay then, thank you very much indeed to Harriet Pryor for producing, Mike Kearney for being on the log flume, Ian Ryan and Rob Gutman. It has been a frantic, a fraught Anfield Wrap, but we all got through the other side. Great work from Harriet and Rob, just proving that like so many things in life, you can make a mess but you can clear it up and it'll be fine. Oh Ian, I tell you what, let's get the violin off for Ian Ryan. Fill in time furiously as I said the word subs 19 times. It's been the Anfield Wrap. Take it or leave it. Sports Social Podcast Network.